Now on to our bloggers roundtable. Is Condoleezza Rice campaigning to be John McCain's running mate? Plus, traditional civil rights organizations struggle to stay relevant as online activism explodes. With us, we've got Arlene Fenton from the blog Black Women Vote, Wayne Hicks, known in the blogosphere as The Villager. He writes the blog Electronic Village, and Jay Anderson of Average Bro. Welcome, folks.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
So, you know, we mentioned earlier in the show that some political insiders are saying that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice may be interested in being John McCain's running mate. The consensus among our two political experts was probably not, but maybe she could even run solo in 2012. I'm going to keep this one tight. Arlene, what do you think? Is she going to gun for that VP spot?
Not at all. She has no desire at all to be on a ticket. She said it many times. From what I understand, she's going back to Stanford. And I think that's really just coming from a lot of wishful thinkers on the right. But she has expressed many times that she's not interested at all.
Wayne, is this really about just wishing that there was a black person who could fill these shoes on the Republican side?
Yeah, actually, I would be very, very surprised if McCain even wanted her on the ticket. She doesn't bring economic experience that he would need from whoever is his running mate. She's not been in an elective office, which to a certain degree means she hasn't been vetted, you know, for the type of strain that comes with running for an office, much less the presidency. And quite frankly, she's tied very closely to George W. Bush, and he's going to be running away from the concept of being a third Bush term whenever he can. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me from John McCain's point of view.
Jay, what do you think?
I think the whole concept of playing racial chess, you know, and basically, you know, throwing Condoleezza Rice out there is really a counter to Barack Obama is maybe a little bit insulting on the surface. And let's just be honest. I mean, if you had to choose a black person, I mean, come on, Condoleezza Rice is not exactly the most popular choice if you were going to add someone to the ticket. I mean, it's not like they're adding Beyonce. I mean, come on, Keisha Cole.
Now that
you could choose some other people, but just overall, I think they were floating the idea out there just to gauge your reaction. I personally don't believe. I think it is still out there. I mean, Dr. Rice, of course, came out with her statement yesterday, but I think we'll see. I mean, when we get to Minneapolis, St. Paul in September, we'll see what happens then.
You're going to send me to Photoshop to make a McCain Beyonce 08 T-shirt.
Got to do that.
Anyway, I want to talk about broader issues of leadership on a more grassroots level. There was a recent Washington Post article asking if civil rights organizations like CORE and the NAACP are passé 40 years after MLK's death. Now, some of these groups, like the NAACP, have been struggling with money troubles. There's leadership issues. There's aging membership, declining membership. On the other hand, there are these new online outlets like The Color of Change, which has over 400,000 members, that try to bundle grassroots younger organizations. And last year, when six black teens in Gina, Louisiana were arrested, The Color of Change helped gather protesters to march in Gina. So the article poses the question, what would happen if W.E.B. Du Bois or Marcus Garvey had a laptop? Jay, what do you think would have happened?
Boy, I mean, imagine the possibilities. I just think overall, if you look at what bloggers are doing and how we're bringing a different voice to the table, a different voice to the conversation, it's amazing. I mean, if you imagine the possibilities of what, say, Dr. King or W.E. Du Bois or anyone, you know, of that era might have been able to do with the technology, with the access to information that we have nowadays.
Arlene, is there something that we give up by doing so much online? I mean, I'm certainly invested in it. We have our blog here. We have a Facebook community. But there is still a difference between grassroots, door-to-door, knocking, meeting people, shaking hands, and e-activism. What are the pros and cons of that approach?
Well, I do think that online activism does create kind of a designer-type activist that excludes a lot of people. There are plenty of people of color who have not yet crossed the digital divide, and that's an issue that a lot of bloggers and online activists need to explore further. So I think that's, you know, one of the drawbacks. One of the good things is, I mean, just the fact that you can spread so much information in a short space of time, the quality of the information is beyond anything that can be done on paper. So I think that the reason that many of these established organizations are struggling is that they've failed to embrace the technology because they already have the brick and mortar. They already have the people who understand who they are, but they've not really embraced the internet like they could have.
Wayne, what are the ways to blend, you know, hybridize this approach? Because, you know, for example, with the Gina Six Color of Change situation, we talked to a young man from Morehouse, and what he did was he found a posting about these protests online, but then he printed it out and went and took it to a bunch of people. So it was a mix of online and face-to-face networking. Do you think that's an approach that's going to really, you know, strengthen the entire question of who gets to mobilize people?
Yeah, online activism can only take you so far because it is, by definition, online. And most of the problems that exist in our world exist in the quote-unquote real world. So you do need to get out into the real world. I would personally love it if organizations that have a tremendous legacy in our community, like the NAACP, the SCLC, Urban League, I would love it if they would embrace the technology. I would love it if National NAACP, instead of having to wait for their quarterly board meeting of 129 people, could indeed be having some online town hall meetings. Could it be using blog technology to get the word out about bills and legislation that we need to call our congresspeople about, et cetera. They just simply don't have the leadership to do it, which is why they become, and the question can be asked, are they obsolete? Are they irrelevant? They don't need to be out there. They need to find ways to work with us. Instead, we too often find ourselves almost at battling one another for no good reason.
You know, when it comes to this issue of what the traditional organization should do, there have been so many different blog posts. One said, if we are to be a truly colorblind society, then these groups should disband. It's up to the federal government to be sure laws are in place to address every civil rights issue. There's always the question of, has the time passed for organizations like the NAACP? And people have a variety of answers. I want to get yours quickly, and I'll run through you. Arlene?
Absolutely not. And first of all, I don't believe in being colorblind. There's nothing wrong with color. It is supposed to be embraced and accepted and respected. And so I really don't see anything wrong with having organizations designed to help a certain group of people, especially if they are suffering some kind of injustice. So no, I don't think the time is over for those types of organizations.
Wayne?
Absolutely not. We have never had a person of color that served as our president. We only have one person right now that's an African-American that's in the United States Senate. Out of the Fortune 500 companies, there's six black folks that are running a Fortune 500 company. Out of all the governors of all of the 200 years of our existence, we've had four. And so is there still a time for activism by African-American organizations like the NAACP? Absolutely. We just need them to understand that this is no longer the 1960s and the 1970s. We're now into the 21st century and take advantage of our 21st century tools.
Jay?
And Farah, I think we have to be honest and look at these organizations for what they are. I mean, and not expecting more of them than that. The NAACP is a racial justice organization. They are reactive by nature. You know, something happens, they react. They ask people to boycott, they ask people to march, so on and so forth. What I'm hoping is going to happen with the blogosphere, and what I'm hoping we're going to bring to this the table here is, you know, encouraging people to do things proactively. A lot of the problems we have in our community are not things that can be solved with a march. I mean, things like, you know, if you look at the issues with just the achievement gap, for example, I mean, there can't be a march for that. There's not going to be something that happens that garners a reaction that's going to solve that sort of problem. I think overall, we as a people have to stop looking at these organizations to solve our problems, and people have to come in and do their part. I mean, it's really as simple as that. Otherwise, we're going to be having the same conversation 20 years from now. And you're right, the NAACP will be gone. And, you know, if you look at the blogosphere, maybe we'll be looked at as obsolete as well.
I want to go to a specific question of whether or not certain types of activism are harmful. There is the case of the Dunbar Village rape. There was a Haitian immigrant brutally raped by mass teens in these housing projects in West Palm Beach, Florida. Her son was also beaten. Since then, four teens between the ages of 14 and 18 in age were arrested and charged as adults. So last week, Reverend Sharpton showed up in West Palm Beach to denounce the denial of bail to those defendants. defendants. He compared them to five white teenage defendants from Boca Raton, Ritzier area, who were accused of raping two middle school girls after drinking on New Year's Eve. Those white teens, who also raped suspects, were granted bail. Now, NAACP activists also protested what they see as the disparate handling of the two cases. Sharpton said the black teens remain jailed while the white teens are free on bond. You know, is this a question of racial justice, Arlene, because you have been out in front on this?
Absolutely not. And I was extremely outraged by those movements. And it's very common. And in fact, if these organizations are going obsolete, it's more because of stances like this than their inability to embrace technology. A lot of black folk out there really see a lot of inconsistencies with the types of cases they select. For example, the victim of this crime was a black woman and her black son. And this idea that we must choose the lowest common denominator of white racial justice as our standard to embrace is racist in and of itself. And I think most of us have enough sense to realize when a crime has been committed of this magnitude that you do not go behind and try to release these same suspects into the community that they were locked up to protect. And so, you know, there was a huge groundswell of outrage and motions and of activism against them. And I think it was well deserved.
Now, I'm going to go to you, Wayne. You've written about this. What are, you know, what would you focus on, and what are some of the other bloggers that you've checked out focusing on in terms of this debate between, you know, is this a case of racial justice for the defendants, or who's really looking out for the victim?
And I think the first thing you should do is, as Arlene suggested, you just look at the facts. And in this case, the facts were that the NAACP West Palm Beach branch and Al Sharpton were wrong to have a press release and to stand up with the parents of those defendants, those rapists, and say they should be released because the young white boys had been released in another part of the state. The facts said they were wrong. Therefore, what the blogosphere did, what we did as bloggers, was we went to them behind the scenes quietly, one-on-one, and said, you're wrong. Please correct the record. Please support the victim in this case. Please do not release and advocate for the release in this case of these four thugs that went out and gang raped this woman and her son. And we didn't get a response. The NAACP stonewalled, Al Sharpton, his group stonewalled. In fact, they tried to say, well, we had something incorrect. And that's when the power of the bloggers got together. And we just quietly, effectively, in places in all four corners of the country, began to tell the story. And Al Sharpton on his radio station recanted. And then NAACP recanted. And that's how this thing works. If folks don't learn to work together and to get the facts right, that it's very difficult to fight against the strength of a blogosphere that has no, you know, real leader. It just is out there, if you will.
Now, I have to point out that they are not yet convicted rapists. They're alleged rapists. But Jay, last word to you quickly. Do you think this is an example of some of the, you know, the ways in which there is a diversity of opinion in the black community, and it's healthy, or is this potentially destructive?
I think it's healthy, but I think, again, just back to my prior point, we have to move beyond reaction. You know, these kids have committed an atrocity. There are no two ways around that. It's happened. But I wish we in the blogosphere would start focusing our efforts and trying to get to cultivate our readers to do things that are proactive, to encourage people to go out and tutor and mentor and coach, so that we don't have kids who think they have to do this sort of thing and force, you know, a mother to endure this sort of atrocity. I think, again, our focus has to start being towards solutions, not reactions when things happen.
All right. Well, Jay, Wayne, Arlene, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Arlene Fenton from the blog Black Women Vote. She was at the Audio Post Studios in Philadelphia. Wayne Hicks, otherwise known as The Villager, writes the blog Electronic Village, and he was at WGUC in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Jay Anderson's blog is Average Bro. He was at NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org.